Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson RV, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle, streaming live on MyRightPlus.com. Don't forget about the live video feed on 710Sports.com, and of course, the venerable TheOutdoorLine.com with blogs, podcasts, and so very, very much more. Good morning, Bob Buchanan.
Tom, good morning. How are you?
Bob Buchanan, BOMAC, SMI, giving Joey Pyburn a well-deserved day off.
That's right.
You know, oh man, it's a busy season for the bait guy. I can tell you that, man.
He needs a day to get the herring scales off.
Dude, he's got the herring scales in the funniest places these days.
He does, just
absolutely amazing. I tell you what, a lot of anglers around here got herring scales, salmon scales. You know, I mean, it's going on right now.
Yeah, it was something else yesterday.
Dude,
a lot of pictures.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, and our beloved Dory Monson got his first ever Washington fish. Rocky brought him up to Sitka a couple years ago, and he first caught his first fish ever. So now he's caught a salmon in his home state, and that was a fun day. We'll get into that a little bit later, obviously, but the bigger picture here is obviously we have a body of Chinook that's entered Puget Sound that's maybe not the biggest individual size, but in numbers right now. I mean, give me your perspective on this.
There's some pretty good numbers out there. I mean, I knew four boatloads of guys.
Yeah.
From Point No Point to Mid Channel, and they all got them.
Yeah, and so we went out scout, and there's so much to talk about right now. I just don't know which way to go. So we went out. Actually, got to see you on the water with John Martinez on Wednesday during that little the area 8-9 shrimp opener was 8-1 and 8-2 shrimp opener, which didn't have a lot of people fishing.
No participation was. And, I was shocked,
and it was only two pots.
Yeah,
right. So, I don't know. I wonder if there's quota left. You know, we don't know. But anyway, right. But we got our my beloved Kathy got her prawn dinner.
Nice.
So and it was great to see you out there, but your whole bait organization thing, you know, we've got a world-class freaking shrimp and crab fishery out here. So we're going to have a little fish world-class bait with Bubba drill a little bit later here today, because you've got, and you've upped my game so much in with that respect. And it's one of the most, you know, everybody concentrates on gear, which you should. But when in a pot fishery, if you don't have the right stuff, they ain't coming in your gear.
Right.
All right. So put a pin in that for a second. But we got to go do a Raymarine demo with Mike Sertic and a couple folks that were, you know, are considering Raymarine gear. So I go, okay, you want to look at some gear? Let's go take you out on a boat ride. I go, Mike, you're paying for the gas. He goes, okay. So off we go, and we go drop crab gear. And okay, now watch the pot go down to the bottom. Boof. And so he'd never seen that before and really understood it before. But when, you know, you watch a pot go down to the bottom and you see the rope going down too and everything, it's like, holy crap, right?
Yeah.
When we're trying to teach somebody how to use marine electronics, I always try to show them radar first, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can see, you got a visual reference. You see the boat, you see the piers, you see the land, then you see how it's depicted on the radar, right? But you can't take the water away and show people a fish on the sonar. So you have to kind of do object lessons, right? So we drop crab gear, watch the thing go down. Then I go, all right. Mike goes, let's go to possession. Let's go. Okay, right. And so it's a day before the opener. And we roll out to possession. And I actually posted one of the screenshots.
Mm-hmm.
And it spoke for itself.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And so you got Chinook on the bottom. There's bait. There's Chinook up in there. There's another, and then there was a big, like, freaking 20-pound Doniker right in the middle of the screen. But, you know, to show somebody that and have the ability to show them, okay, here's crab gear going down, here's salmon, here's bait, here's kind of a drag, and then we just went around. So in the morning, yesterday morning, I thought, all right, I got to stop at possession, right? I got to look. And we saw the same marks, even though it was a little different tide stage and everything like that. And I went there, and the big ones I saw weren't there, and there were small ones. And we got a couple shakers, and I didn't see a whole lot going on, so we headed on out to mid-channel. Nikki was already there, Nikki Kester. And Nikki put a snot bubble move on him, dude. Nikki got the fastest limit of biggest Chinook of that I know of today.
I had some people that were at Craven Rock, and they thought, where's that guy going?
Yeah.
He can't be done. It's impossible.
He's done. Yeah.
He was
done. Yeah. So that flood at Mid-Channel fished extremely well yesterday, and it did. And it should be of surprise to nobody, given what's been going on at CQ, given what went on in Area 7 and stuff like that. But and there was fish caught on possession, don't get me wrong, but it was not – possession and no point weren't all that.
Right.
They weren't. There were – I mean, were people getting action? Yes. But there was – what I'm excited about is there is a whole bunch of sublegal Chinook in the Sound right now.
Right.
A whole bunch. But that carpet of bait that we saw this time last year, Bubba –
I had some folks tell me that at Mid-Channel they did not see a lot of bait, let alone birds.
We didn't see – so there were a few birds.
Okay.
But they looked hungry. Okay. And there, but there was not the schools of bait, and which surprised me given the absolute biomass of sand lance that was up in Area 9 and, you know, in the open water portion of – excuse me, in Area 7, in the open water portion of Area 7 out on, you know, Hind Bank and whatnot. There was a couple different year classes of sand lance, and so – I assume that the most prolific sand lance area that I know of really in Puget Sound is that sandy gravelly flat that is Mid-Channel Bank.
Right.
And they just weren't a bunch of sand lance. And then the fish that we caught were puking up the same looking little herring we saw last year, the inch and a half to 2-inch young of the year herring. Problem with that last year was there were so many of those.
Right.
They were swimming through soup down there.
Right. Right. There was a lot of competition for what you had in your hook last year.
Why bite that when yeah. why bite a piece of metal?
You got the real thing.
You got the real thing right there. So number one, yeah, I there's a bunch of Chinook coming in. Number two, the lack of bait made, you know. Now, I don't expect the same catch rates today. Let's keep in mind that nobody has fished Chinook in Area 9
for a year. Yeah.
Okay, and I never thought I'd say that, but basically that's kind of what the deal is. But this time last year, we were really scratching our head. I mean, Joey and I fished all day last opener for a couple chances and put a good one in the box, right? And that's kind of what it was last year. And so the season lasted until August 15th. It ain't going to last till August 15th this year.
No,
I don't. I think we'll end up hitting the quota. Last year we did not hit the quota. So where are we at in the quota? Let's kind of start at the bottom and move our way up. Area 11.
21 to 25%, somewhere right in there of a couple days ago.
Right. And our good friend Gabe Miller is down there working that right now.
He's hammering it.
He's been doing really, really well. And you know, he spent a lot of time on the boat. He's not able to really go to the bathroom. He just stays on the boat the whole time. Poor Gabe.
Yep.
He's
dealing with it.
He's biting his lip. He's going to stay out there until he gets his Chinook. No question about it. Area 10 had some fish. Okay, but it wasn't what Area 11. It wasn't what Area 9 was. I don't think so. So we're keeping our fingers. Keeping our fingers on the pulse of that. Yeah. I tell you what, we do have a text toy open, 710-710, powered by Yamaha Outboards, and the phone lines are open, 866-979-3776, locally 206-421-3776. That is the reverse hand hotline brought to our Wellcraft Duckworth Northwest boat. We got Mark Uwasa jumping on here for the regional roundup coming up here during the BOMAC tech line. He's going to run us through a lot of the coastal numbers and what his view of it is. Robbo's kind of tweaking some gear up north, okay, and what he's doing is pretty interesting and is definitely going to fit into our game plan moving forward. So Captain Krusty Robbo himself is entering full crustification mode, but he's taking his frustrations out on the fish, no question. And there's definitely some silvers that are entering his catch well. And then the Middle Columbia, I mean, yep. Joey bombed out of the studio here last Saturday. And shot right over and jumped in Austin Mosier's boat and had a Chinook so fast, I could not believe it. They're getting their coho, or excuse me, they're getting their sockeye, thank you. They're getting their sockeye, you know, in pretty quick timing over there.
Yep.
And so, but they're going to be running up against a catch cap there too with regard to the sockeye. Now, today's the Derby back there in the middle Columbia, so that's going to be interesting. Austin Mosier going to jump in there in the Wellcraft wheelhouse. And
folks are going to get real nimble. Real fast, because they're going to be hopping around.
You're going to have to hop around a little bit this year. There's no question about it. But the coast is, you know, the coast is really, really solid. And the only so this time last year, we were very, very concerned about how the coastal quotas were going, right? So there's something kind of not great that's happening that's really kind of okay that's happening, okay? So without getting too confusing, tell you what, I'll put a pin in that. Give me 90 seconds, and let me explain what's going on the coast that's not great but is really pretty cool too. So all that and a lot more here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
From the shining shores of Puget Sound to your radio, this is the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Line. I'm Tom Nelson. That's Bob Buchanan. Matt Nelson running the board back there. 866-979-3776, locally 206-421-3776. That is the Reverse Chine Hotline, brought to you by Wellcraft Duckworth Northwest Boat. 710-710 is the textometer, and that's brought to us by the fine folks at Yamaha Outboards. Public service announcement. This is from the 206. This is going to happen. It's going to happen to some. It probably happened about all of us. Public service announcement from the 206. I'm also trying to make sure to follow the rules. That being said, I didn't fish last year. Made a couple mistakes yesterday. Paid for it. WDFW is out. Paid me a visit. I just retied all my gear. Forgot to pinch the barbs. I also forgot to mark my fish in the middle of a hot bite. We had multiple rods going off, putting two fish in our boat, and it cost me. So,
ooh,
yeah, ow. That's an expensive lesson. Another guy from the 425 went 3 for 5 yesterday, but everyone was wild. 3-inch Gibbs spoon, Bonchovy. Great. And here's my fish had 4-inch herring from the 206. Good morning, guys. My fish had 4-inch herring in their stomachs at Possession Bar. Yeah, we were marking schools of herring at Possession, but we're looking for sand lance in the dirt, kind of.
Right.
So to pay off what we were discussing right before the break was, we're seeing numbers on the coast that are, just absolutely flip-flop from last year. Where last year we had a really tight coho quota, and so the sport fleet got a chance to go out there and just burn those out and eliminated our chance to get
to our Chinook.
Get to our Kings, absolutely. So if you run down from north to south this year, you got Ilwaco at 10% of both Chinook and coho. You've got Area 2 Westport is 20% through the Chinook quota and less than 5% through the coho quota. There's no catch in La Push, despite the fact that it's open. There will be now because it's open. And Nia Bay is at basically 40% of the guideline and 2% of the coho. So what's going on here? What's going on here, Bubba?
Possibly the OPI.
Yeah, the Oregon Production Index.
It might not be on spot.
So the problem I see is they're not catching coho because the coho are not there.
yeah.
And that's a bad thing. Or let's just say the coho forecast was very optimistic.
Right.
Okay, the 1.7 million number we saw bantied about. We're not going to see that this year. And talking to Robbo, which we will at 7 o'clock too. He's going to tell you the same thing that he's seeing in Southeast, right? Is it for some reason this coho quota, coho forecast probably is not going to achieve its full number. So when the seasons are set on this big forecast, we get bigger sports quotas. When we get bigger sports quotas for coho, it's going to let us go to work on this forecast of Chinook that I believe is conservative.
Correct.
And I think it's conservative in the Columbia. I think it's conservative on the coast. I think it's conservative in the Straits. I think it's conservative in Puget Sound. Okay. Now, we've got a couple closures coming in here, too, which is going to be a big problem because there are some hatchery runs right now that are overperforming or really, really solid. And there's some that are lagging behind. And so WDFW dropped a press release last night detailing some closures that are coming up, and most notably CQ, right? That's Sunday night.
CQ, the sky, the bubble.
CQ, the sky, and the bubble. Okay, so CQ, victim of its own success, similar to Marine Area 7, the San Juan Islands, right? It's hitting its quota. Now, they're going to leave enough quota there of the Chinook quota to go ahead and get their humpies and get their coho, right?
Yep.
But on the bubble, the returns, though, to the Bernard Gobin hatchery facility in Tulalip Bay have been lagging behind.
Right. They got to get those caught up.
They got to get those caught up for sure. So that's going to close to both recreational and commercial harvest pressure. So the bubble's going to close. So is the Skykomish to Chinook retention. So the double-edged sword here is number one, that those, despite the fact there's Chinook everywhere, there's those two facilities need to get their egg take.
Right.
So they're going to shut down. And I think the Sky was scheduled to shut down end of the month anyway, right?
I believe
for
so.
For Chinook.
Yeah.
So, but the bubble was going to go on through September. I think the bubble's going to open back up. I mean, given the number of Chinook that we're seeing here, I firmly believe we're going to see that open back up.
They're going to get here.
But two things going on here. The Pacific Salmon Commission earlier this spring announced an initiative to increase hatchery plants here in the state of Washington by 20 million smolts for southern resident killer whale prey availability. All right? So the SRKW is going to get more to eat. In order to ramp up that much hatchery production, in Tulalip Bay alone, it's going to go from 2 million smolts to 4 million smolts a year. Similar numbers, you know, at the Marble Mount facility and at the Wallace Rack on the Skykomish. You don't just go from a 2 million smolt release to a 4 million smolt release without upping your egg take.
Right.
So that's what's going on there, too, is they need more eggs. Now, the one thing that I'm surprised and a little dismayed at, I thought the Humpies were going to join the party yesterday.
I thought there'd be a few more. Down in 11, we've seeing a fish or two now. Starting late last week, a humpy or two at the clay banks were hearing about being caught, and they're working down. They're coming, but I really thought we'd be.
I mean, Joey and I got one on opening day,
yeah,
in the San Juans, and I thought, okay,
yeah,
here they come, right? So I mean it's early.
It is.
It's early. I mean, by August, you know, they're going to come in, but, you know, and I'll have to reach out to CQ and talk to, you know, see what's going on out there. It could be the grits are so good that they're still out there, but I still think this is going to be a big humpy run. And that's kind of one of the underrated aspects with regard to abundance and inverse production is when you do have a bunch of humpies out there eating all the grits, you're going to get a smaller average Chinook size, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they could eat into the coho's grub a little bit.
Sure,
too.
Sure. So. And they can keep some of those fish away, maybe further out, further up north before they come back.
They don't, and there is kind of a humpy avoidance program.
Yeah, yeah.
They
kind of say, let those guys get in and take care of themselves. I notice that in my backyard.
Yeah.
In the green, I notice that those humpies will come in on the humpy year. They'll come in that first week of August and start pouring in there. And I won't see the Chinook in numbers until September.
Interesting.
They won't come.
So that's kind of why, you know, I've got hope that we've got a summer ahead of us, gang.
Yeah.
Okay. We're just in the middle of July, so hold on to this right now. There's going to be lots to fish for, but we will have some closures that we're going to work through. Okay. So tell you what, you know, when there's so much going on, you got to go to your go-to guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere down in the South Sound, somewhere there is somebody from the Uwasa family trolling around in a boat that you made. Okay.
Yep.
And fishing that awful meat line gear, which is just horrible.
Okay? Some are.
They're horrible. I did that stuff.
He's very ductile. He can move around with every kind of gear.
But Mark Uwasa, who would rather fish a headless herring than anything else, is going to join us next. Mark Uwasa's regional roundup here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome to the BOMAC Tech Line. BOMAC has all the gear for all your techniques, and SMI shellfish gear is simply the best. BOMAC, we catch big fish.
Welcome to the Tech Line, presented by BOMAC here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. That's Matt Nelson behind the glass. Got Bubba Buchanan of BOMAC SMI sitting next to me right here, giving Joey Pyburn a well-deserved day off right here. And on the phone, the Outdoor Line's blogger emeritus and all-around knowledgeable good guy and heck of a stick with a mooching lead and a couple of hooks there.
Yep.
Mark Uwasa of the famous fishing Uwasas. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, guys.
How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Well, just coming off this high from the Columbia last week.
Well, let's start there. Since you started there, let's go ahead and start there because if there is a cloud on that horizon, it's the recent run size update with regard to the red salmon and or sockeyes in the Columbia, and guys are catching their fair share, Mark. So tell us about what's going on in the Central Columbia there.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'm sure we'll get the on-water scene from Austin here in a little bit, but they updated that run count there, and it's sitting right now at about 149,600. Which is down from preseason, which is about 155. And so, you know, that cut into the harvest rate, obviously. And so this is part of the reason why we're going to have the closure after Sunday. The good news, you know, they're keeping it open for kings. And, you know, I had a chance to fish it with Aaron Peterson, you know, Peterson's Northwest Guide Service down at Chelan Falls and Wells Dam late last week. And, man, I mean, that's a fishery to definitely go up and try, for sure. I mean, it's one of those daybreak bites, but, you know, there's this big, deep slot of water on that west side of the riverbank there right below BB Bridge. And, boy, you know, that cold water, the fish just hang in there, and it could be some awesome fishing.
Yeah, it's tremendous. And the cool thing about what's going to go on here is, you know, there's such a technique disparity between catching the sockeyes and catching the Chinook. Will you catch Chinook on sockeye gear? Yeah, that'll happen occasionally, but rarely will you get a sockeye while targeting Chinook in that stretch of river. Is that a fair statement, Mark?
Yes, indeed. What I found amazing was Aaron was using some Brad's mini cut plugs, the kokanee size ones, and we were getting kings on those little things, and it's just when they slam that rod down, oh my God, it is so much fun.
Yeah, no question about it. So that Chinook fishery is going to carry on for a while. That thermal barrier is only going to, you know, continue to get stronger and kind of hold a lot of those fish in that particular neck of the woods. So until we get, you know, maybe some rain or some moderating temperatures, you know, those fish are going to stay kegged up in that stretch down below Chelan Falls for sure. So we recently got some numbers in from the coast, Mark, and you keep your fingers on the pulse there. So let's do a quick wrap around starting in Owako and heading up the coast. What's going down out there in Chinook Town in Owako?
Yeah, well, it looked like the coho numbers really, really climbed down there at Owako this past week. I mean, the overall catch per rod went up to about 1.14 fish, you know. I mean, when you see something like that, wow. And I think the coho number of catch per rod averages a little over a fish per rod. So, you know, you see numbers like that starting to ramp up, and that might be an indication that, you know, the coho have moved in a little closer. But, you know, along that surf line right down there past the lighthouse, you know, there's still some kings in there, you know. I know John Kaiser's been down there nailing the fish. So, you know, it's one of those exciting places to be here in the next few weeks, and it's only going to build as Buoy 10 starts to open up too. So.
Yeah, no question. But at this time last year, though, we were pushing on a coho closure. I don't think we were fishing coho in Owako into the third week of July last year. And so my silver lining to that, obviously, with both the Chinook and coho quota burn down in Owako roughly around 10-11% is
right,
we have
right.
a genuine shot at achieving our Chinook quota in a number of marine areas.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and I think that's going to be the caveat for when Buoy 10 opens is that with that bigger coho number down there is that folks will be able to run out to the ocean if Buoy 10's slow. I mean, we didn't have that option last year.
No, we didn't. Right. No, we didn't. And that's an absolutely huge aspect to that fishery because, you know, it's the techniques are similar between the river and being out over the bar. You know, if you're talking that surf line heading up to mm-hmm. towards Long Beach and whatnot, but it's a different deal. It's anchovies and divers, right? In the middle of the water column, and you can just get absolutely railed in there close to the beach, but it's a more consistent fishery at times than Buoy 10 itself, particularly early in that season. So yeah, if you're down there, I would say if you're down there anytime after the 10th, you know, when hatchery and wild coho become fair game on the Columbia, that may be a great option for a guy to go do that. So, meanwhile, the surprise to me this year is what's going on in Westport, Mark.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're, you know, boy, the Chinook numbers, you know, they're averaging half a fish per rod this past week. And I think you mix in some coho and you're getting close to a fish per rod. You know, that's good news. That place was a ghost town last year. And some of these kings are pushing into the, you know, the mid-20s. You know, high 20 mark, and so that's some quality king salmon action going on, definitely.
I tell you what, if when things get funky around here, you know, if we get some closures, you know, in our Puget Sound seasons, you know, you got to get out to Westport. I mean, you're going to have
to. Hightail.
You got to. Because you're right, Mark. I mean, some of the larger size Chinook, and the cool thing is, as we sit here in the middle of July, some of those 25-pound Chinook that are out there are going to be 32, 33 by the time they come in the river mouth, given the grade of feed out there. And some of those coho, what a lot of people don't understand is the last 6 months of life, coho will double their body size.
Yeah, they're absolute feeding frenzy right now is what they're doing.
Yeah, and so Mark, that I tell you what, I'm so excited for. I mean, I do not wish my July away. I covet my July like crazy. It's just there's so much going on around here. But August is going to rock, dude. August August is going to be awesome around here. I tell you,
it will be. It'll be lights out for sure.
no question about it. And so, despite the fact that the Quileutes opened up La Push, we really didn't see any catch recorded yet in that fishery. So let's just skip right over. Head on one notch north and talk about our beloved Marine Area 4, Nea Bay, Mark Uwasa.
Yeah, you know, and you guys talked about this a little earlier with that CQ closure. I mean, you know, and still Nea Bay, the port itself being closed, you're going to see a shift of angler effort over there. And not to say that it's already happening, because it is. I mean, you've got 1,600 anglers that were out there between the 5th and 11th of July and the checks. And you know, that average of the overall average of what, almost a fish per rod and a dominant catch of kings right in on that surf line. I mean, that's money if you tell me. Anything from Wada to Tatoosh and everything in between, like Duncan Rock. I mean, oh my God, that's just got to be one of the grandest places to see fishing for kings in that shallow water fishery along the kelp bed.
I'm blessed to have seen the coast with my own two eyes between. You know, between the mouth of the Columbia and the tip of the Alaskan Peninsula, and what the magnificence of the rock structure at Nea Bay stands alone as some of the most amazing backdrops you can possibly imagine. And again, you keep in mind that this time last year, I think we were done with our Chinook, or excuse me, we were done with our coho quota, which shut off our Chinook fishery in Nea Bay. So now we've got a chance to fish Nea Bay a little bit longer too, which is, you know. You want to talk about a silver lining. Holy smokes, Mark. Yeah.
You know, and you know, with these, like you guys were talking about earlier, with a lot of these closures happening, you know, my whole mantra over the past, God, I would say 10 years now has been, you can't sit on your butt and wait too long. Since everything's so quota driven, I mean, when these waters open up, like you said, the San Juans, I mean, CQ, you know, they're all facing these closures. You got to get out there right when they open. And usually it is money, right, when they open. And if there was any indication, you know, the kings are already there. And you know, it's just, I keep telling people, you got to go when it opens. I mean, don't wait too long or you're not going to be fishing there.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Okay, so what else are you hearing? What's top of mind for you? I know your beloved Marine Area 11's been producing really, really well, and so what are you hearing? What's your take on the Marine Area 9, Area 10 opener that occurred yesterday, Mark?
Yeah, I think you guys talked about this a little bit. I mean,
just a little.
You know, the interesting thing was that there isn't much bait around up in 9, you know, which is surprising. But yet, that's not going to stop the fish from coming down, as there was any indication yesterday. When I talked to a lot of people, they were done by 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, you know, and from mid channel all the way down here to Richmond Beach. I mean, that was one of the surprises to me, was Richmond Beach. I mean, normally you don't see that fishery come on until about August. But when I talked to Nick Kester yesterday, and he was telling me that, you know, despite him running up the mid channel, he the day before did a little, you know, gas run up to Edmonds and stopped at Richmond and, you know, released, I think what he said was 3 kings in a matter of 2 hours down there. So to see those numbers of fish kegged up is pretty nice.
It is. And the surprise is there's so many guys that are working that resident coho fishery. And very few of those guys had encountered any Chinook. And typically, you know, they're fishing coho gear at coho depths. But still, when there's a big body of Chinook that are coming into Marine Area 10, some of those guys are going to get railed by a Chinook on that gear. And it really wasn't happening until about 2 or 3 days ago. So that's why, you know, Nikki and I talked about this at length and kind of pushed in all our chips, you know, to the north end of Marine Area 9 yesterday. And it paid off. Now, I think the catch rates between yesterday and today are going to absolutely, you know, fall off. You know, I mean, you got the opening day effect and everybody's, okay. Nobody had put a piece of fishing gear in Marine Area 9 in 9 months or 10 minutes. Okay.
Exactly.
So let's calm down a little bit here. Okay. There was a bunch of easy ones. Yeah. Okay. But now, you know, it's going to moderate somewhat. And you know, Bob Buchanan and I are sitting in the studio kind of scratching our head wondering, you know, why we got this kind of early push of pinks. Joey Pyburn and I got one on opening day in the San Juans, a pink, and I didn't hear of a pink yesterday in 9 or 10. Now, I'm sure somebody got one, but usually one of my knucklehead buddies will show me a picture of a, you know, pink Griffindale. Hey, I got one, you know. So what are you hearing on the pink front before we let you go, Mark?
Yeah, well, you know, funny you mentioned that. Yesterday I was, you know, kind of on my computer looking around. I always like to kind of see what that west coast of Vancouver Island, they have a big, you know, commercial test fishery that goes up
Area
along
19?
There for both sockeye. Yeah, 19 and 20.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of, you know, you see what pink numbers are coming down. It didn't seem like the pink numbers were quite there yet, but, you know, for any indication of what the guys up in Alaska and that very southern tip are finding right now or just being inundated with those things, you know, we can only imagine that here come in about 2 weeks from now, know, we're going to see the front end of that freight train coming at us.
It's going to be a pink wall heading this way. No question about it.
Yeah.
All right. We got to figure out a way to get you on the boat here soon, buddy. It's been too long since you graced the deck of one of my boats. So let's get you out. He's Mark Uwasa. You can find his work all over the place. And you know, most near and dear to my heart, obviously, the work he does for us on the Outdoor Line on the blog front. So, Mark, please keep in touch, my friend. Send me a link to that index fishery, that Canadian deal, and
yes,
and we're going to talk a little bit about the potential. Maybe everybody we can get over the border here shortly too. There's been some breaking news on that front. Mark Uwasa, thank you very much, sir. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Mark.
You guys have a good day.
All right. Coming up next, Raymarine Picks of the Week for the 17th of July. Don't let this thing slip by. We'll be right back here in the Outdoor Line 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome to the Outdoor Line Picks of the Week, presented by Raymarine Electronics. Don't just go fishing, go hunting underwater. Raymarine, simply superior.
Welcome to Raymarine Picks of the Week. Log on to raymarine.com. You're going to find a complete line of cutting-edge marine electronics in pursuit of kings. Check out the Caliente fishing team. You can watch the whole story right there on raymarine.com. But also the thing I'm excited about are the new Lighthouse cartography that's going to be available now. It takes your fishing cartography to a new level. That's Raymarine, raymarine.com. So, Bob Buchanan, you want to talk about taking stuff to a new level. When I get a chance to do some pot fisheries with you, whether it's, you know, whether it's crab or whether it's shrimp, I always pick up a bunch of great tips from you. So, Joey and I have made no secret about the fact that your crustacean coiler, the SMI coiler, has just revolutionized the speed and organization of how we drop pots. Pulling 400 feet, keeping it organized, not an issue anymore. Now, I mean, that coiler, and actually we had Lauren Bivens, a Harbor Marine, out on the boat yesterday too, and that's the first time he got to see that stuff in operation.
Hands on.
So the key to that system are the C-links. The C-links are basically a really close letter C, and there's two of them, and if you can picture in your mind's eye the opening of the C and another C, you'd turn the link 90 degrees, and they join, right? Like a magician popping rings together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they stay together. The advantage to this is you come to your float as you're pulling gear, and your floats are on one of these C-links. Take that C-link off, throw it on the deck. You take now the other C-link, and you just put it on the coiler, and you just
roll it up.
Roll it right up. And it keeps your lines organized, and it's amazing. Now, you set me up with a couple of your float systems for the shrimp opener. And had you not, there may still be a shrimp pot in Puget Sound, because I experienced some currents that were not anticipated. And so you have a staged system. So talk to me about how you set that thing up. And also, Your attention to detail on this is it's so astute that I've been using lead line to make my pot lines, right?
To make your float.
Make my float. Yeah. Why? Yeah. You use floating poly.
Right.
So it adds just that much more flotation to your gear. But talk to us about how you set up your float lines and the staged aspect to this that keeps your gear floating when all others around you are sinking.
And believe me, this is all done because I've made those mistakes.
Yeah, our school of hard knocks.
Yeah, it's the only way you get there. The floating poly is a key thing. Staging the floats on that chain link or that setup, C-link, that C-link setup. You want one float at a time to kick in to work. You don't want two. And simple reason is that you want that pot staying as still as possible. And my rule is when you see those two floats go down, those two medium yellow floats go down, you are really susceptible to, on a 35-pound pot, to that pot moving around down there.
Yep.
But when that second one does start to work and go down, that's when you've got to get your third insurance policy on there. You got to snap that on with a halibut snap and again with the floating poly on there. But it's all about storage in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Those two float systems stows right inside the pod, as you saw.
Yep.
And all you got is one pot, your float system inside it, your auxiliary float is stored below deck somewhere, and then you got your rope winder that contains two pot ropes.
Yeah.
And that stows below deck. So it's just really easy. But stage those floats so they kick in one at a time. When the first one goes under, the second one starts picking up the slack and is there. And if it's riding good, nice and high, you should be okay.
And the way you do that is you've got a small, almost like a seine float that starts the whole thing. Then one of the full-size yellow floats, or red and white, whatever. And then a length of line that mm-hmm. and this – and these floats can slide on this line. So if you've got two floats, their total length may be 2.5 feet. You've got maybe 6 feet. You got to fathom a line.
And the purpose of those same floats is so that you can tie a knot in your poly, and that knot cannot slip through your big float. So it's just a stopper.
Stopper.
Look at it that way. It's just a stopper at both ends.
It's a stopper, but it also makes your gear stand out because not a lot of people use it.
Not a lot of people do it, and you get to pick your own colors.
Oh,
so,
yes,
for instance, Matt Bly, the Cannon Man, is down there. He's got red and orange, and I've got yellow and white.
And when you're fishing, I mean, in our pot fisheries these days, you know, and crabbing now, I mean, we don't have an opener in Puget Sound for shrimp right now, but you know, we're open for crab. And if you do something like that with your crab gear and you're using a yellow poly mm-hmm. and you're using red and white floats and you have a couple different seine floats, it helps you pick your gear out at a distance. Mm-hmm. It also helps other anglers stay away from your gear. Oh, that's mm-hmm. not mine. That didn't look like mine, right? But if you just run red and white floats on your crab gear, okay, you look like 90%
you look like 90% of them. And it's going to be a goof up. You're going to pull it up and say, gosh, that's not my pot.
Right.
It looked like my gray leaded line and everything else, but it sure
this
isn't
wasn't
mine.
My pot. Right. Yeah.
And but he's got a couple crabs, so
oops. Sorry. So at that point somebody will put an empty beer can and a love note in the crab. And no bait. They won't rebait it, but they will take your crab. Right. So okay. Let's talk about the other aspect of this. And so I'm gonna call you out. You're a bait nerd.
Yeah.
You're 100% bait nerd. I showed up there, and you already had bait made for John Martinez's boat. You had bait made for my boat, even though I already had my own bait made because I'm a bait nerd too. Yeah. But
I learned that from John.
You did.
I learned quite a bit of that from John, and we have done a lot of experimenting together over the years. And this year, with the amount of openers we've had 3 or 4 trips together, and we think we have it dialed in.
Gotcha. And so the base of your bait is basically now shifted away a little bit from being pellet-based to being more mackerel and cat food-based for shrimp.
More of that with a little bit of oil.
Right.
Where oil does a couple – oil is good.
It
gives you scent. It gives you a lot of things. But it also is bad in the aspect it
– mess.
It gets on your rope. Oh, it gets on your boat. It stains your shrimp when they come overboard. So we try not to use as much anymore.
Gotcha.
And we're using more of the canned mackerel.
Right. And so the consistency of the stuff that I ended up with from you was the consistency of a really thick pancake batter.
Yep.
Right? And so if you – look at that, and you look at the typical big pellets that you get.
Yep.
You, dude, you can't. It's tough to make those pellets into pancake batter unless you do the blender deal and bust it all up. But that's a lot of work. So then the other thing you did, and you don't know how close you were to losing that McClendon's bucket with the screw on lid, right? I'm bucket bandito, dude. I love my buckets. So and Kathy's rolling her eyes at home right now. She's meanwhile throwing buckets in the garbage and getting rid of them. It's got my, cause for
you can't have enough.
You can't have enough buckets. No shrimp angler can have enough buckets. But here's the deal. And you even took the step of leaving me a nice big plastic serving spoon too.
Yep.
So you unscrew the bucket lid because you can get these tight fitting buckets that the lids unscrew. Big 5 gallon. Well, not 5 gallon, but normal bucket size.
Yep.
And so that thing can tip over in the boat, and you're not going to leak a drop of anything on it.
Nothing spills.
Nothing spills.
Bed of your truck, back seat of your car.
Nothing spills. Nothing spills. You're not going to get it all over your deck. Nothing stinks. You're not going to get flies in it. The cats aren't going to, invade your boat or nothing. So I'm stealing that, dude. I've actually got a couple of those screw-on buckets, and it never really occurred to me to do that. But just so you can make your bait a long time in advance and put it in a screw-in bucket and keep it cold, and then you're set.
That's what we used to keep the dog food in, and then the dogs lost their buckets. So their food's a little stale now.
So then at the end of the shrimp opener, we got our prawns, and now I've got all this extra bait that you gave me and some that I had. So I kept most of my shrimp heads, and I threw the shrimp heads in that mixture and ran my white trash blender, which is a 3/8 drill motor with a big auger, right? Kind of like a drywall mixer.
It's
right?
Exactly what it is.
Mine's a little different. It's a dog steak deal, right? That I cut the steak off of, and but it's just a little auger. So I threw all the shrimp heads in there and ground those up in there. Then I took that stuff that was still flowing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I took some smaller buckets, so you can buy you can buy shrimp bait in smaller plastic buckets, right? Mm-hmm. And I love having those on the deck because they're handy for this or that. Or if you're bagging up a bunch of fish, you can stake a stack of Ziploc bags out of the box and put them in that bucket right there, and they won't blow around on the deck while you're using them. Grab one at a time. So I had four of those. And so I poured those all full of that and threw them in the bait freezer in the garage.
Yeah.
The next day, I had what looked like chocolate ice cream.
Right. But it's the best scent trail for a crab pie you can get. One of the best.
So now I have these big blocks of frozen shrimp bait. And so now, what do I do with those? All right, well, I took my serrated bait knife, and now I'm cutting these in half. So now I have these blocks of frozen broadcast bait, and I put two of those in a bag and then in a cage in the crab pot with some other hanging bite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And poke a couple holes in that bag.
Well, it's a mesh bag.
Mesh bag.
Right? And so sent those down. And I dropped them with Mike Sertic when we were doing the demo on Thursday, and every pot that went down just looked like there's mud coming. I mean, the scent and the crabs approved.
They did,
dude.
They will,
and some big ones.
I'll take that shrimp bait from, for instance, we were up in Area 6. Bring it back, do much the same things. I'm fortunate to have a fridge at the office so that I can keep that bucket in, and that fresh spot prawn bait will turn into my Coonstripe bait for down in Area 11 and 13.
Oh, yeah.
And so I will keep it for 2 weeks in the fridge. After that, if it isn't used up, that's when it'll go into the freezer.
It's got about
a two-week life before it has to be frozen. And once you freeze a shrimp bait like that, it when you thaw it and put it back in, it's going to break down substantially faster than it originally did. So it won't fish as long. So if you were getting a 45-minute soak on your canister with that mix, you'll probably be lucky to get 20 minutes
but
after it's frozen.
Yeah, I'm telling you what, man, it never hurts to make some extra shrimp bait if you're a crab guy and you are going to – it's going to – freezing that stuff, putting it in the –
There's no waste.
You're not going to waste it. That's for darn sure.
And there's nothing in there that's going to go rotten unless you leave it in there for a long time. So you're fishing with a relatively clean bait. And I personally have a problem with raw chicken and
things that you don't
want to handle get on your knife handle and anything else. So
So that's a blog.
Not that it doesn't work.
So
but
we're going to take this off season and do some in depth videos of this kind of stuff and pot rigging too, because you know, it's you've definitely upped my game with regard to fishing pots and the rate at which my wife will eat prawns. I'm gonna keep her in the crustaceans. Let's just put it that way. Robbo has entered full captain crustification mode. He's going to join us next, followed by the Northwest Outdoor Report presented by American Pacific Mortgage and Mark Tilschner, thehomeloanangler.com. Austin Mosier coming at us live from the Brewster Pool. Roy Robinson RV is really wearing a whole lot more. Stay tuned for Jam Packed Hour 2 right here on the Outdoor Line 710 ESPN Seattle.